There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along as we keep our eyes on what's happening in Montgomery as they're back in regular session. Gaveled in yesterday afternoon and a lot of bills dropping out there. What I want to talk about here is HB 41. And you may know this man's name, of course, from Satsuma and the police chief, but also brand new District 102 Representative Shane Stringer joining us on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Let's talk about HB 41. What is that?
It's a bill regulating the electric cigarettes, the vaping devices. Alabama is one of three states in the union that do not regulate these devices as of right now.
Okay, so what does regulation of vaping mean? I mean, how do you regulate it?
It would be done similar as cigarettes are. There's no laws right now. A retailer could sell these devices to a five-year-old if he could reach up to the counter and get it. This bill would put a age limit, make it 19 to sell to minors or to sell to children.
Right.
And it would also put in a device where the ABC board could regulate it, because as of right now we don't even know how many retailers in the state sell these devices.
Okay, Shane, help me with this. So it doesn't matter how old they are, they can buy the device. Is the device separate from, because forgive me, I have not vaped, I don't know the vaping stuff, so is it a two-part? I mean, you got the device and then you got something you put in it, right?
Yes, you have the fluid that goes into the liquid. Some of them are sold together and some of them are sold separately. Basically, you know, right now the more popular one is called the Juul.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Juul, these devices most of them are running around 5% nicotine, but some of them have even up to 10% nicotine in them.
And I don't know what that, how does that compare to like cigarettes or smokeless tobacco? Is it the same level or?
One Juul pod, which is one of the little things of fluid, is equal to one pack of cigarettes.
Wow. Okay. Significant. Now, if right now as the law stands, you said no regulation. So if they're, like you said, big enough to get up over the counter, a kid could buy one. Can they buy just the device? Can they buy that fluid right now in Alabama too?
Yes, they can buy either of the products.
No,
right now.
So it's nicotine, but there's no regulation.
That's right. And one thing that we're seeing is they're selling them in different flavors now, which is kind of targeting the children or the youth, and it's working. You know, we've seen around a 900% increase since 2011 in the use of the electronic cigarettes now.
That over what they were using for e-cigarettes before, or that increase over cigarettes?
That's just in the use of vaping devices.
Okay, and it's, you're talking about those flavors and those smells. I've, you know, joked about it on the air so many times that it's something to see a old boy on a rumbling Harley in traffic in front of me, and here comes this cloud of smoke or steam or whatever out of him, and it smells like strawberry shortcake. It's like,
yep.
It's like, how tough can you be? So I'm Very surprised. So there's no regulation as it stands right now. Nothing. So they can, kids can go buy nicotine, I guess, lack of a better term, legally. I mean, nothing could be done about it with the law. Okay, so so the bill you bring, HB 41 here, what does that say? How are you going to regulate this? What would the rules be going forward?
It would make the retailers have to purchase a permit from the state to sell these devices. That would also put them under the direct division of ABC board, which they could monitor, you know, and just regulate it just like they do cigarettes. They come out and do compliance checks to make sure they're not selling to youth and monitor that. It also addresses, you know, not being able to use these devices in vehicles where children are being transported, like a daycare van or inside a daycare. And it also just it regulates and talks about opening up these stores around daycares or schools.
I mean, is it going to help me here? Is it basically going to treat this vaping like you do cigarettes? I mean, is it going to put them on an even playing field? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is so a House bill. Have you talked to anybody in the Senate about this? You got some support over there?
I do. Have already been reaching out to, you know, just trying to kind of test the waters and talk to everyone in the House and the Senate, and it's looking good so far. We're set to go to committee 130 to correction.
Yeah, 130.
Yeah, 130, and then it will be reset probably until next, not next week, but the week after we come back for a vote.
Hey, can I, let's, I mean, you're up there. Tell us how that works. If you're just joining us, talking to Representative Shane Stringer, District 102. So when you bring up a bill, kind of walk us through that. Give us a little insight. Pull back the curtains. It goes to a committee. Is it just a general committee, or do they find it like the tobacco committee? How does it work?
The speaker will determine which committee it goes to. They determine based on your bill which is more likely, like this committee, I mean, correction, this bill will be going to the Judicial Committee because it will have some fines and penalties if it's violated. So it will go to Judicial Committee, and then once it's in committee, it will be discussed. Any opposition can come in and bring up their points, and we'll talk it out. And then after that, if it's voted out of committee, then it'll get set a date on the floor.
Okay, so
we'll vote on it.
So when it goes to committee today, are you like standing in there in the committee, and people that have questions, you're answering them? Or are you in there? How does that work?
Yes, sir. Yep, I'll be standing there, able to answer questions as anyone has them, and then, you know, of course, whenever the opposition gets up, I'll be able to question them and, you know, work with them and see where we can hopefully find a happy medium in this.
This is a very Mobile County bill, because you've got across the aisle there, you got Barbara Drummond, representative, on this as well.
That's right. It's a bipartisan bill. This is really and truly, you know, you hear it time and time again, but this one is truly to protect our kids. You know, our youth. This is such an epidemic, and you know, during the campaign, while running for this office, I was contacted by just about every school in my district, informing me of what an epidemic and a problem it has become in our school system with our youth.
Yeah, I know that, hearing it from my children too. The vaping that goes on, and I guess right now, I mean, schools can have their rules for sure, but as it stands now, and if y'all didn't hear this earlier, as it stands now, the kids vaping aren't breaking the law.
No,
that's wild. I did not know that. It's news to me. Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty frustrating. You know, and it's kind of sad that every state in the union, except for three, have regulated this. You know, and I don't want us to wait until we're the last state to do it. Something needs to be done now. We have a lot of support from different groups across the state, from the Drug Education Council to the Superintendents Association, and different groups across the state see the problem, and they're stepping up to help us with this fight.
What about that? Those are the people supporting. Are you getting opposition, and if you are, from whom?
Yeah, we're getting opposition, but right now, some of the retail associations and, of course, some of the tobacco companies are against it. But, you know, I think what we're seeing is there's such an increase in the vaping that some of the tobacco companies have bought into these companies and actually purchased some of these companies. It's becoming the new smoking now.
Okay, but I mean, Shane, this is, I would tell them, I say, fine, y'all can be for it, but you're not talking about removing vaping for adults. You're saying you're going to treat them just like cigarettes, just keeping the kids and the teens from vaping, right?
That's it. You know, and they're advertising them as a safe alternative to smoking, but we don't know that. These devices have not been out long enough to know that for a fact. It's just like when cigarettes were first introduced years ago, they were thought to be safe and okay, and then we learned later they were not.
But even if, let's say that, we agree that the science is still out, even though some people say the science says it's not harmful, some people say it is. The point is, you're not talking about adults. You're once again talking about children. It seems like these people with the vape would say, okay, yeah, we're fine with that because we don't want to be given. I mean, doing neither of them is better. You know what's better is not smoking and not vaping. So, I mean, I think they should at least be on board, at least publicly supporting this. I would encourage them, if this is just to keep kids from doing it, you're not, once again, this is not limiting adults. I don't know why they're not on board.
That's right. I was kind of surprised at the opposition myself, but I'm sure it's probably going to hurt sales. I mean, because obviously the school system, the information I'm getting from them, it's like 1 in 3 students are either vaping or have tried vaping.
Wow. Wow, wow. All right. If people want to get more information, it's HB 41?
Yes, sir. It's HB 41. You can Google that, and it'll pull you to the state system, and you can look it up. And just encourage everybody to reach out to their representatives and senators and ask them to please support this bill, because this is going to impact our state in a very positive way.
All right. We'll be watching this as it moves through and hopefully out of committee and to the rest of the House. And I appreciate your time, and we will talk soon.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all so much.
All right. District 102 Representative Shane Stringer joining us right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 123 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Good to talk to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins. Hey, man.
How's it going on this beautiful day?
Yeah, it's going good. You know, we're always talking about the great items you have for sale in there, which, by the way, I got to make a pit stop for some more open-L knives very soon. But you're also buying stuff at Mobile Bay Coins.
We certainly do. You know, we talk about all the stuff we have for sale. We talk about our free appraisals. A lot of people think all we're doing is offering free appraisals, and that would be really cool. But we're offering those appraisals based off of what we're going to buy stuff at. So if you have a coin collection that's been languishing around, maybe some old jewelry sitting in a dresser somewhere that you don't wear, you don't care for, maybe it's broken, maybe it's just not your style, we actually buy those types of things every single day. So if you need a little extra money, maybe it was because St. Pat's was a little too much fun for you, we can help you out and hook you up.
That's a great deal. And on the flip side, if we're looking to buy precious metal, if people haven't done it in over a year, they might not have known what's new in Alabama. They're not paying sales tax on that.
Yeah, that was something great that happened last year, and I wanted to really thank you and Bart for all your help with that. You don't have to pay sales tax anymore in Alabama on gold and silver or platinum bullion or U.S. coins and currencies. So, heck, that's a savings of 10% right off the top.
And great stuff. Give people directions to come see you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. They can call us at 725-1590. But tell you what, check out the website and then listen to our podcast there at mobilebaycoins.com.
Of course, and also check y'all out Tuesday nights at 8 right here at FM Talk 106.5. Good stuff, Angelo. Thank you, man. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins, and we're rolling on. By the way, Attorney General Steve Marshall joins us in just about 10 minutes on the show. We'll talk with him about a couple things. Number one, where is that lawsuit? Where is it standing right now trying to deal with census numbers that will be coming in? You know, the census will be, 2020? Is that the census? It could end up bad for Alabama, to the point that we lose representation in Washington. We'll talk about that, why a certain question on the census is one that Attorney General Marshall believes could be detrimental to the state of Alabama, what he's trying to do to keep that from happening. And plus, we'll talk about the drugs moving in. He had a presser the other day where he said, I think 100% or maybe close to 100% of the drugs that come into our area are all from the Sinaloa cartel. We'll get into that coming up in just a little bit. All right. And on the vaping thing, yeah, I got a lot of text on this. I think the interesting part here to me, because I didn't know, I was ignorant that it wasn't 19 to get the vaping stuff. You know, I think that there's people that are say the jury's still out on the vaping, whether it's a safe alternative. Listen, that argument can happen and all that, but I think the simple one, I think it's low hanging fruit. You got a bipartisan bill, Representative Drummond, Representative Stringer, HB 41, talking about making it 19 to be able to buy vaping stuff. I mean, it has nicotine. It seems like that would make sense, right? If you're not allowed to legally buy nicotine in smokeless or cigarettes, then you shouldn't be able to do it in the vaping world. All right. And then, there's this. I'm just going to give you a quick clip here because I've talked about this story for the last probably year or so. And that is a story of this groundskeeper out in California that claimed that his use of Roundup gave him non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Okay, this is, I think, very big, not just because of a specific case in California, but if this moves on, what does this mean for Monsanto? The maker of the weed killer Roundup has continued to defend its product as safe, even though a jury has found in favor of another person suing the company over the cancer diagnosis. Here's Jim Root from Westwood One with more.
Tuesday, a federal jury in Northern California determined that Roundup, which includes the chemical glyphosate, was, quote, a substantial factor, end quote, in Edwin Hardeman's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Phase two has now gotten underway to determine if Bayer, which acquired Monsanto last year, is liable, and if so, for how much. Last August, a jury awarded another man with cancer nearly $300 million, which a judge slashed to $78 million. The company stands by its product, citing several studies that conclude glyphosate is safe. Jim Roop, Los Angeles.
Okay, so you have individual cases, and then it'll be a question on how concentrated. Number one question is, was it used by the manufacturer's warnings, right? Were all the warnings heeded for the glyphosate, or in this case specifically the Monsanto brand Roundup? Were all those warnings heeded? Then beyond that, If the answer to that is yes, then in what concentrations was it used? And then if that question ends up being that it's not in some incredibly high level, then does this bring suits like this around the country? And, you know, and this is where there's so much nuance to this, and you would have to have a lot of research to see if it truly is linked. It's not a spurious correlation. You know, correlation is not causation. In other words, if you've got somebody who has cancer and somebody who used Roundup specifically or some other glyphosate, just because those two things exist, does it mean that the Roundup or the glyphosate gave them the cancer? That's what's going to have to come out in the wash. Is this is this correlated? Or is it just circumstantial? There's so much to this. I think we're at the very beginning of this. I don't know if it's tobacco lawsuit level, but if this goes forward, it could be very, very big. You could see your evening news, I think, saying, have you ever used glyphosate before? Call call our firm and we'll try to get something worked out. I just keep your eyes on that one. All right. Hey, before we run to the break, Dalton, ready yourself. Gird your loins and all that kind of stuff there in the main room, as I'm going to look for color number 6 right now for another family 4-pack of tickets to the Festival of Flowers. Not a place to take Roundup 2. Do not take glyphosate to the Festival of Flowers. Bad. They're going to pat you down for Roundup at the Festival of Flowers. This goes on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I got a family 4-pack of tickets, which is like a $50-something dollar value. You and the fam heading out to Providence Hospital campus, and it opens up Thursday at 9. And it goes 9 to 5 on Thursday, 9 to 5 on Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday, and then 11 to 5 on Sunday. One of the big features is here, the Dutch Gardens with a windmill and canal and that whole construction. 150-foot-long canal, I think they were telling us the other day. Plus, you've got all the vendors out there, the children's activities, and the beautiful, beautiful flowers. What a great way to spend what's going to be a fantastic weekend along the Gulf Coast. A family four-pack of tickets. Festival of Flowers starts on Thursday out at Providence. Caller number six, the tickets are yours. So good luck. All right, coming back, Attorney General Steve Marshall.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, congratulations. Very good work. Bob Campbell won that family four-pack of tickets to the Festival of Flowers. They, I don't know if they open up the gate or pull back the tent canvas or part the azaleas, whatever they do to open up tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, out at the campus of Providence Hospital. 4 days of the Festival of Flowers. More information online and on Facebook for them. Just Google that. All right, 1:36, and time to check in with the Attorney General of the state of Alabama, joined by Steve Marshall. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being on with us, and a bunch of questions for you. I want to start off with a subject you and I have talked about many times on this show, and I'm trying to get an update here for the listeners. Where are we with the state, our part of the lawsuit about the census and the way the questions on the census? I guess, first of all, back up and tell us what is it question on the census and why that's an issue for Alabama going forward.
Sure. You know, wow. In a broader perspective, you know, there's been much discussion about whether or not the census itself ought to include a question about whether or not the person who is being interviewed is, in fact, in this country lawfully. And so there is separate litigation, different than ours, involving a question that, frankly, has been on the census for quite some time. It's remarkable that that now is being questioned at this point. Our lawsuit, really, though, is very specific. It has to do with, based upon the census information, whether or not, for purposes of determining the members of Congress, and that specifically we're talking about the House of Representatives, whether or not those who are in this country unlawfully will be counted. What our expert tells us, if those in this country illegally are counted, then Alabama's going to lose a congressional seat, Ohio will lose a congressional seat, as well as Montana, and that those seats will then go to Texas, Arizona, and California. And if you think about, kind of, again, your civics lessons, not only is the number of members of Congress important, and again, Alabama does not need to lose influence, but also it means that we lose a vote on the Electoral College. And I'm not comfortable with Alabama's vote going to the state of California, and so we're going to continue to press a very specific constitutional and then administrative law question before the court, which is part of our complaint, and that is to simply ask for a court order from a federal judge here in Alabama. It tells the Census Bureau that when they send that number across to the president for certification, that they remove anybody that's in this country unlawfully.
Now, so in our history, we have, I know you don't know, you'd have to see what happened back then, but conceivably, illegal immigrants have been counted as citizens in states?
Well, I tell you what our lawsuit does is actually look historically
people,
yeah, to kind of what the Constitution, and the Constitution speaks to counting of persons for census, but when you look at how that term was construed historically, and we really go back even before our Constitution was even developed, it really is referencing citizens. And it only makes sense because if you think about who can vote in a federal election, you can only vote unless you're a lawful citizen of this country. And so it makes no sense whatsoever. And in fact, dilutes the voting rights of those who are citizens in this country to be able to count those for purposes of determining a congressional delegation that couldn't even vote in a congressional election. And so we think that not only do we have a sound constitutional argument, but also one based on whether or not this, and it's called the residence rule, it was adopted during the Obama administration, in fact, was adopted appropriately. And so we also are very appreciative of the fact that Mo Brooks has joined us as a plaintiff in that case to make sure that we had a plaintiff from our congressional delegation that could say, It's going to harm Alabama if, in fact, we lose one of our members. Right now, the Department of Justice has filed a request to dismiss our case, not based on the merits, but actually under a legal concept called ripeness. In essence, they're saying that we have filed our case prematurely because we've not seen the numbers yet to determine whether or not Alabama would actually lose a congressional member. What we say is it's appropriate to deal with it now before things have gone too far. So I know the judge has that matter under consideration, looking forward to him, what we believe to be rule in our favor, and then it will allow us to consider the merits specifically of our case. And I'm hoping that the Department of Justice will embrace our legal theory and, in fact, decide to be able to join our position on this case.
And just joining us, talking to Attorney General Steve Marshall, and you said something there that helped me understand more of the judge and that ruling before. So the judge is, it's almost a semantic argument, not even a semantic argument, it's not the right term, but he's arguing that we don't have place to say anything yet because the harm hasn't happened. Is that
right?
Is that fair
enough?
That's
what the Department of Justice is arguing, that basically that the issue is not ripe for consideration for the court because it is premature. So, again, that's not an unusual argument to make. It's one that actually was used effectively in a challenge many years ago in the state of Louisiana. But we believe, again, based upon what we can already show from existing data, what we believe that the numbers that our expert can defend, that the court's going to have sufficient information to be able to make a decision even before the census begins.
Yeah, and the key question here, the essence question is, to me, I'm with you. I mean, common sense-wise, I think it's self-explanatory. But then again, you know, there's constitutional scholars out there that gnash their teeth and wring their hands over these things. But if the job of the census is to figure out it's about representation, then you can only represent a citizen. You're not representing somebody who's a citizen of another country. I mean, is that overly simplistic? I mean, help me not sound foolish on that.
Matter. One of the congressmen made an analogy. I think it's appropriate. Is that if we had an invading army that came and crossed our borders right before a census would take place, we wouldn't count those members that came in that army. You know, and no different here is that if you can't lawfully vote, if you have not entered this country legally, then why is it that your person should be counted for purposes of determining who represents the citizens of this country and the decisions made in Congress? And so, you know, we think, again, that we've put forth a compelling case for the court. There's still work to be done. And it's really, you know, many times you have cases in which there are significant factual disputes. This is really not a fact-based case. It's really more a matter of law. And so we think that we'll be able to brief this case for the court in an appropriate way and look forward to him giving us that opportunity.
All right. I want to jump to the fact that Representative Mo Brooks is in is because he's an injured party because he could lose a congressional seat? Or how do you make the case?
Yeah, okay. We believe, and it goes again to another legal doctrine called standing. Is it, who is it that has the ability to claim that they could be harmed? You know, as somebody in our congressional delegation that conceivably, you know, in redistricting, if we had to go from 7 to 6, you know, you're going to throw two congressmen one way or the other into the same district. And so he has the ability to not only argue a lessened influence by one fewer member in our House of Representatives, one fewer opportunity for somebody to be on a committee that may be as substantial for issues in Alabama, but also to argue personally as somebody that could conceivably put into a contested election against a sitting congressman that otherwise wouldn't take place.
I saw this last week. You joined President Trump for a White House discussion about the impact of cross-border drug trafficking. Talk with us about that.
You know, one thing that I have appreciated greatly about our president is he listens to law enforcement, and he's a major supporter of law enforcement. And I think we've had an opportunity to talk on your show before how this White House has very much reached out to me personally about issues of illegal immigration, as well as the impact of illegal immigration on matters of criminal justice. And so, you know, one of the things that I've had an opportunity to share with the White House and with the president personally is that there is a direct connection between border security and drug trafficking. Now, sometimes folks may not think that Alabama should be concerned because it's not a border state, but what I do know, and I learned this completely from our both federal and state drug officials, is that the Sinaloa cartel is primarily responsible for the illicit drugs that are in this state. Those are crossing the border principally from Mexico. And so to the extent that we can engage in significant border security, then it's going to allow us to be able to concentrate our resources in those ports of entry, not only to stop the flow of illegal drugs, but also we were able to share with the president about the fact that during my time, for example, as the DA in Marshall County before I became AG, that over 70% of our drug trafficking cases were against those who were in this country unlawfully. And so not only is it the border allowing for the drugs to cross, but also those who are engaged in part of the distribution as well as the return of money to Mexico to the cartel of those drugs that are sold. And so appreciated the opportunity to be able to share that in a meeting with him directly. But the other thing that we talked about is that there's also that direct connection between drug trafficking and violent crime. And so I shared with him some very personal stories in Alabama of a 13-year-old autistic girl who watched her grandmother be stabbed to death and then was beheaded because two members of the cartel were there to be able to exact revenge on that grandmother. Or in Shelby County, we have a drug trafficker who spent time in an Alabama prison, was here unlawfully, was deported, and then shortly after he was sent back across the border, he came back to Shelby County and raped a juvenile. And then even back in my own Marshall County, where I'm from, we had somebody that had been deported three different occasions, came back again and raped a 12-year-old girl. And so he needs to hear those stories because those are the things that law enforcement knows, not necessarily a part of the national narrative, but yet when we talk about securing that border in Mexico, and in California and in Texas and Arizona, it has an impact on Alabama, and we wanted to make sure that our voice was heard there and appreciated the fact the president called and asked us to be a part of that discussion.
Yeah, as you you pointed out in one of your other discussions, too, as we're talking about drug trafficking, it's got to get from the border to places like Atlanta, and that means it comes through where I'm sitting, right here in Mobile.
Exactly, exactly. And don't forget about our human trafficking side as well.
What is the latest on that? I mean, we hear that it's a term that 5 years ago, I think very few of us even knew what that meant, and now it seems to be omnipresent.
Yeah, and I think we're becoming more and more aware of what's going on, but also I think, Sean, it's a recognition that maybe how we kind of historically viewed prostitution was wrong when we failed to recognize the dynamics that were taking place with many of those, particularly women that were involved in prostitution. What we do know, especially young girls that run away from home, is that a vast majority of them end up, if they're gone from home long, getting trapped into the world of human trafficking and prostitution. And then the other thing that I think we've done is to educate law enforcement in a much better way to be aware of what to look for. And you know, we, for example, partner with several outside agencies. We just held a training session here about a month ago that we had to turn people away, which involves a collaborative effort with our trucking industry and our truck stops, is to be able to educate those men and women that are on the road driving 18-wheelers and those that work in truck stops on what they can look for to be able to identify these victims. Or we had, you know, people hear about interdiction on our highways relating to illegal drugs. We trained people from throughout the state, our troopers and others that are on our highways, about doing a similar activity and interdiction for identifying children that were the victims of human trafficking. In fact, we've made multiple cases already in the state. And so I think it's an area that not only has been a priority for us, and we've continued to work to try to work with law enforcement and prosecutors about how we can do this effectively, but it's also a narrative that I think is becoming, like you said, much more prevalent in the normal discussion. And so we've been able to engage churches and nonprofits to be able to help us from the standpoint of providing shelter and safe places for our victims to go, and then trying to work on ways that we can more effectively prosecute it either in federal or state court. And I've really, really been pleased with some of the progress we've made there.
Attorney General Marshall, one last question here and subject that has driven a lot of calls and a lot of discussion about CBD oil and legality. Can you break down for us what is the legal? Give us percentages. What's legal? How do we, you know, what do we use as a judgment on that?
Well, I would tell you that this is an area that's still in flux. And the reason that it created it, because it was not the case, you know, as recently as 2 months ago, is when Congress passed a farm bill, They specifically dealt with CBD oil and industrial hemp. You know, CBD can come from two different sources, one of which is actually from marijuana extracted from the plant itself, or separately is from industrial hemp. And Congress, through that farm bill, specifically dealt and limited itself in dealing with CBD from industrial hemp products. And so what I think that you're continuing to see is, through that bill, FDA was supposed to come out and is scheduled to come out with some guidance to be able to help local enforcement authorities. And typically, law enforcement and prosecutors are not there to enforce FDA violations, but yet, you know, we may be in that point if they give us the authority. But what we do know is that they have not expanded consumables. For example, we were seeing in stores gummies and suckers and other products in which CBD was infused. That is not something that Congress dealt with, nor is it something that has been ratified in the state. But what is out there and is being discussed is just the CBD oil itself, you know, something that's applied topically, I think, in most cases. But my caution to folks would be this, is that what we have found from previous seizures of these products is that there is no uniformity on what is contained and what is marketed as CBD itself only. What we found was, in many cases, there were synthetic cannabinoids or, you know, fake marijuana or synthetic marijuana. We've seen other substances in there that was not marketed. Or we found the same product and we tested two different bags of it and they contained completely different compounds. And so right now, I think there is no way that I can tell you that there is a reputable producer of CBD oil. They are not regulated in any way, and it's one of the reasons why we're looking forward to FDA being involved. We've had numerous conversations with federal officials about when they intend to act, along with meeting with DEA about what the role of law enforcement is. My best advice right now, as we've told prosecutors as well, is the public needs to tread very cautiously here. The other thing, Sean, is anecdotally, people talk about the value of CBD oil, but yet we have seen very little in the nature of science. The only thing that I'm aware of here in Alabama specifically is when there was a Carley's Law that allowed for UAB to be able to test.
That was a scientific study, wasn't it? I mean, they
right.
stopped the
that's
seizures.
One of the few, and that's specifically with children with seizure disorders. And what we found is there was some value there, but yet, you know, I mean, literally, I've heard people say that CBD oil can cure cancer. Obviously, that's not out there and available, but yet some of the marketing that's taking place right now is truly just fluff, and it's not based on science and substance. And so I think we'll have more clarity soon. We continue to work with law enforcement. We continue to work with our officials from public health. I think there was a directive that was issued by public health recently that also was very cautionary to the public about these products and to be very careful about the use of these products. And I would encourage anybody that has an interest in CBD to be able to go look at public health's website to be able to download that as well. This narrative ought to be driven by our doctors and those who understand the science, and not by people that want to market a product that, frankly, right now has not been proven scientifically to have benefits in a variety of areas.
Yeah, I do think it's incumbent, though, upon you know, law enforcement and government, then, if it's going to be out there, to let people, and I hear what you're saying about the difference in the amounts, but to set some standard, to let people know, what is the law? I mean, that's a fair question. What
is
the law?
It is completely a fair question. I think that's, again, why, you know, we're a little bit frustrated in the slow movement that we're seeing from federal officials, because the way the farm bill was structured, it's waiting for them to take action. And so we continue to have multiple discussions here from the AG's office, both with FDA, with DEA, and others who are engaged. I think you'll see an effort in this legislative session to try to come up with an appropriate definition in Alabama that will provide some guidance as well. But the cautionary note, more than anything else, Sean, is if people are seeing CBD products out there, is to be very careful and very cautious about what you're doing right now, because there is no certainty as to what people are buying.
All right. Attorney General Steve Marshall, thank you. We will get you back on to talk about that soon, because people are wondering, you know, if what they're buying is legal or not. So as there's more clarity, please come back.
We'll do it. Sean, thank you. Have a great day.
Always.
Thank you.
Attorney General, State of Alabama, Steve Marshall, joining us right here on Midday Mobile. 0.03%, but then what if it, and there's the other problem, what is the, if you buy something that's labeled at 0.03%, which is the legal line, right, and then it turns out to be higher, are you supposed to know that? I mean, are they, or can you say, look, here's the packaging for the thing that said 0.03% or less? That's a fair question. All right, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yet to answer some of the people on the text line, yeah, I heard it too, but I didn't want to break out. You know, people come to hear Barefoot Jerry and the CDB, but no, it was CBD, but Attorney General CDB. Charlie Daniels Band is something different than cannabinoid oil. But I think it's a question that's dangling out there, and I got to tell you, law enforcement, the state, and feds need to get on the ball on this. I think it's only fair, as people are looking into this as a treatment out there, that there is some solid law, ruling, opinion, something people can depend on. This is what, you've known this for a long time, when it's applied differently and nobody's really sure what the rules are, that drives me berserk. What we have to have is a situation where if it's 0.03% or less, you know, THC in the cannabinoid oil to be legal, then fine. Then the manufacturers of it need to guarantee, when they say it's 0.03% or less, that it's legal. And then the onus is then on the producer, so the consumer can go buy it and not get caught with it. And that's 4%. I mean, how do you know? That's not fair. That's not fair to people. And I know the AG is saying, well, for now, just be cautious and don't do anything. But how long does that last? If I thought it was going to be 2 weeks or a month or something, I'd say, yeah, y'all chill out. But I'm going to keep pushing on this, because that is a fair, fair question. If there's something that through the Farm Bill or somewhere else has had the green light federally that you can have this medicine for a lot of people, whether it's, you know, truly medicine or it's a supplement, however they're going to, if it's helping people, they want to do it, and the feds have said yes, then the state needs to define exactly what is legal. All right. Whether it be cannabinoid oil or the Charlie Daniels Band, admit. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. By the way, tomorrow it's Auburn Hoops at noon as they hopefully keep their winning streak alive. So I will talk to y'all later on. See you in the morning for Mobile Mornings. And check us out online, fmtalk1065.com.